Hi.
Okay, so we will start with, let's see, stopping the video, sharing this. You think this would get automatic for me, but I still have to really think about it. Play slideshow. There we go. All right. We are going. There we go. Excellent. So we're finishing up the course.
Piper.
No, we're not. We're doing the next to the last module of the course. We're on module 4, which is very similar to what we did with the upper respiratory. Now we're going to look at the lower respiratory, particularly what are some of these specific diseases, what are some of the conventional treatments, and what can you do to help your animals not get these, and if they get them, to heal better and more quickly for them. Often when upper respiratory tracts are not healed in a way that is building health, increasing vitality, and increasing balance, they actually can progress into what we'll be talking about today. They can progress into these lower airway and also lung itself diseases. So we're going to be moving into that, but what we'd like to do is to keep our animals healthy and, you know, really look always at the big picture. Always be looking at what can you do to build the strong immunity, the vitality. Because when dogs are healthy, they just don't come down with kennel cough. They're much less likely to get something like pneumonia or lung cancer. Not saying it can't happen, but it's two things. If they're healthy and vital, they're less likely to get infections, but they're also less likely, and they're also less likely to get deeper chronic disease problems. So that's our goal, is to really look at creating balance. And research is even showing this. So research is showing in multiple ways that having a strong immune system helps prevent allergies, helps prevent asthma, helps prevent autoimmune problems, and even cancer. Some of the lower airway diseases, and we won't go over all of these tonight, but just so you get the names of some of them and are familiar with them, and of course you'll get, this will be emailed to you so you can look at both the slides and the text. So we have asthma, pneumonia, bronchitis, thickening in older animals in the lungs, as well as specific breed-related pulmonary fibrosis, pulmonary thromboembolism, big names, pleural effusion, smoke inhalation, and cancer. Now, very often, heart and lower heart that we talked about in the previous course, heart and lower respiratory problems can look very similar, like these two lions look so much the same. And what you've learned with doing the home heart health exam and the home respiratory exam, as well as working with your veterinarian with some of these lower respiratory diseases, will help you make the distinction if it's heart and respiratory or merely respiratory. Now, part of preventing upper and lower respiratory diseases is air quality. While these two dogs are probably just happily enjoying rolling in the sun, you can imagine that they've been in that smog and they're collapsed from the smog. But what we want is to have dogs that are healthy enough that even if there's smog around, they can apparently be healthy as these two dogs are and happy, even though it's putting a strain on their system. The nose and the sinuses can certainly filter out some of that smog, but they can only do so much. So what we're going to be moving on is the lower. And we're going to do an overview where we're looking
Oops. Sorry about that.
Are we okay? Yep. Yeah. Is it me causing that?
No, Adria was echoing.
Okay. Sounded weird hearing my own voice right back at me. So bronchitis is inflammation of any part of the trachea, the bronchi, the bronchioles, all those tubes we talked about in the first part of the course.
Actually, bronchitis is the bronchi and bronchioles.
Right, the bronchi, not the trachea. Did I say trachea? Sorry. Yes, the bronchi. So everything from the bifurcation where it splits here going into the little tiny bronchioles. Thank you. Basically, it's coughing, and it can be an inducible cough. Doesn't have to be an inducible cough. Now, interestingly enough, with asthma, one of the ways to distinguish between asthma and bronchitis is how they're breathing in between periods of coughing. With asthma, it's sort of like the breathing is difficult all along. And so in between spells of coughing, they're still having difficulty breathing, as opposed to bronchitis, where they're coughing, but then they seem to be breathing normally in between. Of course, that's not going to be 100% that way. And what asthma is are spasms, more than like, it's not just inflammation, but the small airways of the lung are inflamed, but they're spasming. And also, there's a lot of excess mucus production. And as you can imagine, if you remember the slides from the first part where you had the alveoli and it was exchanging the oxygen, well, the oxygen may not even get into the alveoli because of all the mucus, or less oxygen gets into there. And so asthma can cause some pretty severe symptoms. Now we're seeing, as you can see here, since 1870, there's been a strong increase in people, this is in people, of asthma and of allergies. We see this in animals as well. And a lot of research is being done that's showing that the use of antibiotics, especially antibiotics in food, and decreased physical activity are contributors to asthma happening. So I'm going to tell you, as I'll flip through a few of these slides, one of the animals, a cat that I treated many, many years ago, had been born with, well, not born with, but by the time Tony got him, he was having off and on coughing problems. Of course, he was going to the conventional vet, and back then that meant he was getting annual vaccinations, many of them. This was a very pro-vaccine clinic. They tried different things for the minor cough he had. He was active and doing fine, but he had this cough. They weren't sure if it was a hairball cough or if it was just, or if it was something else. They didn't do a lot of exams. They tried hairball medication. They tried some anti-coughing medication. He wasn't doing so much wheezing or having short breath. It was just coughing. When he was 5 years old and got his vaccines that year, for some reason, this indoor cat was given the first of two feline infectious peritonitis vaccines, which is just not really indicated at all for that. And within a few hours, his lips had turned blue. He was wheezing. He was having shortness of breath. And they took him right into oxygen cage, put him on heavy duty drugs. And for the next year and a half, he was on drugs that kept him from coughing, kept him from turning blue, kept him from wheezing, but his quality of life was horrible. He was very lethargic. He didn't play. He was really feeling miserable. And when he called me to start working with homeopathy, we looked at the entire cat, not just treating the asthma, but looking at the cat in general. And in module 5, we'll go into the specifics on how we treated Isis with homeopathy. The outcome was that within 1 month, he was off all of his medications, he was feeling fine, and he lived for another, 12 years, in spite of the fact that his owner had to go into a nursing home, and this cat had to go to somebody's, to a totally new home. Now, very often, diagnosis of asthma can be done, like with this cat, it was pretty obvious. Sometimes, so they'll take x-rays, and we'll see some x-rays in a minute. They may need to use a bronchoscope if they want, and this is for several of the other lower airway diseases as well, if they want to get a good look at what's going on in the tubes, in the trachea, then down to the bronchi, they don't go as far as the bronchioles, but into the bronchi. I'm checking with you, Dr. Jeff, does this go all the way down to the bronchi or just the trachea?
No, it goes down to the bifurcation, and then you can look around if you're good enough.
Can you get past the bifurcation?
Sometimes, not always.
Okay. Now, what can be done with this also is if they want to use antibiotics, they can do a transtracheal wash, which is a culture where they put some fluid in and they bring up and then culture for what bacteria are present. Now, sometimes the conventional approaches are going to be needed because asthmatic attacks, as in Isis, can be an emergency. This cat would have died had he not gone to the veterinary clinic and given some drugs and be put onto oxygen. However, often when you are carefully watching the symptoms and paying attention to some of the triggers that can cause the asthma as well as many other problems in our animals, of course. And one of the biggest ones that holistic veterinarians, especially homeopathic veterinarians, see for asthma is vaccination. And it's also true in people. In the repertory, you'll see asthma after vaccination. So that is one of the rubrics that's listed there. So vaccines are one of the biggest ones, but of course other ones include environment, like we talked about earlier with air quality. People think that if they smoke outside the house, they're not affecting their animals. However, a lot of studies have actually showed that the smoke that you bring in on your clothing can be harmful to your animals as well and can be a trigger for asthma. One of Dr. Jeff's and my colleagues is Dr. Margot Roman, and she said she's had a really good success that by talking about the animal's health, she has 50% of her patients who smoke, of her clients who smoke, have actually stopped smoking for their animal's health. She said she's sometimes pretty firm about it, but she's gotten them actually to shift, which is incredible. I think that's just wonderful. I don't think I tried that hard, I guess, or I didn't ask people if they smoked because I was working by phone and it was a question I didn't think to ask and probably should have. Now, pneumonia. So Debbie is on or not, Dr. Jeff?
Debbie is with us, sure.
Great. Do you want to unmute her?
Well, Debbie, do you want to talk about Kitrin's pneumonia?
What would you like me to share about it? That was quite a while ago.
What I'll do is I'll do a little brief, but I'd love to have you chime in. Okay, Debbie?
Okay.
Kedrin had already been diagnosed with mast cell tumor, and you were working with Dr. Jeff at the time, and Kedrin started to gag a lot. The notes in the records back then said it was almost every hour, and it was severe enough that Kedrin actually fell over. And some of the symptoms of pneumonia that Kedrin had a fever, was lethargic, and had a decreased appetite, and probably was having difficulty breathing too, right?
Right.
And do you remember if Kedrin was coughing up anything?
No, I don't believe she was. Okay. I just, it almost seemed to come on quickly. And I knew there was something seriously wrong, so I called the vet and got her in right away.
Excellent.
So and, that's and some... that first exam, actually, the vet, it wasn't the vet that knows her. In first exam, the vet didn't think there was really anything wrong. But, I mean, I know her well enough that I needed something to be done. So we did an x-ray, and then she said, oh, yes, this dog is very, very sick.
That's a really interesting point. And something we maybe don't talk about enough is that when animals are being treated holistically, as Kedrin was already being treated, you were doing, you know, wonderful things with Kedrin already, that very often they do present with relatively good beam symptoms in the eyes of a conventional veterinarian, in spite of having pretty severe symptoms. So that's a very good point to make. The other thing that Dr. Jeff remembered about that time that year was that it was much colder than usual. It was in January and it was really, really cold. And so that's another type of thing that you'd be looking at in terms of what's causing the pneumonia.
Just want to point out one thing that Debbie made a point so clearly, that is the importance of you guys trusting your intuition.
Yep.
You feel that your pet is not doing well, whether there's a problem or something's going on and your vet said, oh, he's fine, insist on other tests if you really feel strongly as Debbie did. And I'd say something pans out, we find an internal symptom that may be significant. Rarely is it as dramatic as the vet saying it's okay on the one hand and then doing an x-ray and saying, oh my God, your dog has, you know, pneumonia, bad pneumonia.
Yeah, and the vet wanted to do two different antibiotics and sub-Q fluids. And so I let her do the fluids, and I said no to the antibiotics, and she thought I was crazy and said she would crash during the night and wouldn't make it if I didn't do it. So then I talked to Dr. Feynman at night, and we got her started and on a remedy. And I do remember she was very sick for a few days, but she got through it. And the vet also recommended I take her for an endoscopy, but I ended up not doing that. I would have had to go to a different emergency clinic for that.
And again, that's a great example of using HMDM, of stopping. They say do this, this, and this: antibiotics, fluids, endoscopy. And you go, okay, which one of these makes sense to me? Well, fluids make sense. Doing an x-ray made sense, of course, because you pushed for that. But endoscopy, in this case, what would that get us? What would be the results? And antibiotics, we know that homeopathy can work as well in pneumonia, as we'll talk, as you'll see when you read these notes. Homeopathy can work as well as antibiotics and be treating the underlying problem so that you don't get them sicker in the long run. So that was a really good choice to have been made. Now, again, if antibiotics were going to be made, then you want to do this transtracheal wash where they actually collect fluid to do the culture and sensitivity so you know you're using an antibiotic that's appropriate. And sometimes they are sick enough with pneumonia, even a sudden onset, or maybe you're working with a new dog that you haven't had a chance to build up that health and vitality and balance in yet, and so they need to be in oxygen. Another thing you can do is called coupage. Dr. Jeff is planning on making a video of Archie, doing coupage on Archie. And this is something that is really good to learn how to do, and not because your dog is going to get pneumonia and therefore you need to know how to do it. It stimulates by gently pounding on the chest. It stimulates the mucus that maybe is stuck in the lungs to be able to be expectorated and cleared out. And if you're doing this when a dog is coughing, maybe still just has upper respiratory, you're getting those lungs just working better. And it's sort of like massaging the lungs. And it may prevent pneumonia from developing, as well as if they do have pneumonia, the coupage can really help move things around. Anything else on coupage, Dr. Jeff?
No, we'll talk about Archie's coupage, I guess, when we... I guess we did flu last week, didn't we? So yeah, so Archie had symptoms of flu. Sorry, Judy. Yeah. And he was going down, and after his diagnostics, one of the first things we started doing to prevent progression was coupage, which actually is with a cupped hand. So you're almost making like a flapping noise. You're getting an air pocket in there. And you come around in circles over the lung fields, and frequently, if not always, they will yak up a little bit of something from lungs. It is good to do it when they're standing versus lying like this. So I don't know if this dog is just so sick that they can't lie down, or this guy's really playing the drums on his dog or what. But but it's a good preventative for any upper respiratory that you have a cough with that you're trying to prevent progression. You know, if you have discharge and fever and high white count and all the things that can signal a pneumonia or an oncoming pneumonia, this can be preventative as well as therapeutic. So it's a really, really good idea, good practice. And the dogs usually like it because, you know, you're playing with them. You're pounding on them.
Some of them like it. Okay, we're going to move through a few other... Whoa, wait a minute. Okay, so a few other things briefly is, and these are less common, but just so you've heard about them, here's a picture of a thromboembolus, which is a clot in any of the veins, arteries in the lungs. And of course, that can come on suddenly and be absolutely life-threatening. Pulmonary edema. Notice this looks a lot different. I'm not great at reading x-rays anymore, but to me, I can still see the difference. But some of these are difficult to read. And nowadays, luckily, with the digital radiographs, they can be sent to specialists very easily instead of the old days where we had to develop them in tanks and actually mail the x-rays around for an expert to look at it. So the fluid in the lungs, there are two kinds of fluids that you might run into. One is pleural effusion, and that's fluid around the lungs, or you can get pulmonary edema where the cells of the lungs actually are filled with fluid. Both of them, they're usually related to heart disease or cancer, and sometimes the fluid needs to be removed, but it's going to just fill right back up unless you are treating them to build up and build back the vitality. And of course, lower airway cancers, there's another x-ray, and you can, there's this mass that you can sort of see that's been outlined for you on the x-ray. And they can occur anywhere in the lower airway symptom, I mean, lower airway tract. There can be many symptoms or no symptoms at all. They can have any of the upper respiratory or other lower respiratory symptoms along with that. Often you'll have weight loss, definitely beam changes, just really, and again, if they've been pretty healthy originally, cancer is possible to be just diagnosed and you go, wow, I didn't even realize they weren't that sick. When there is a mass, often a biopsy would be needed if you needed to have a definitive diagnosis of what kind of tumor it was, what kind of cancer it is. So it is one of the diagnostic tests. Others, we looked at one already, which is the x-ray. If there's fluid, then looking at the fluid, blood work, of course. And the biopsy can now be done in a much less invasive way than it used to be, which was open heart or open chest surgery. But they can use an ultrasound to actually guide a needle in so that they can see exactly where to get the biopsy from. And so that's relatively safe. Of course, you do need the anesthesia. Now, the goal is to prevent metastasis. If you already have a tumor, then you want to prevent it spreading anywhere else. There could be a tumor that is inside the body, in the lungs, and could be there for 10 years, not causing a problem, once you get the animal rebalanced again. So preventing metastasis is really the goal. And of course, fine-tuning everything you know to do about building health is what's needed to prevent the metastasis and to build health. So of course, it's going to be homeopathy or really good TCVM. It's going to be a good diet, avoiding chemicals, etc. And we'll be talking more about those tomorrow in the second last lecture, the module 5. Beautiful terrain. That looks like the Rocky Mountains in Alberta, Canada. And the terrain is what we want to be healing. We want to prevent cancer, pneumonia, bronchitis, asthma, and we want to do that not by getting rid of any bacteria, not by being afraid of bacteria, but really building health. And often this quote has been attributed to Pasteur, but it was really from Claude Bernard. And so Pasteur passed this on and said it again, that his germ theory, Pasteur's germ theory, that is, that germs cause infection. The germ is nothing and the terrain is everything. So again, if we can build the health, if we can get the balance, if your pet's terrain is great, then you're going to worry much less about upper and even lower respiratory problems. Now, one of the treatment for cancer is chemotherapy drugs. And Dr. Jeff, why don't you talk about Andre's son and the gas mask?
Yeah, this was a little boy, in fact, my homeopath's son. His wife insisted that the little boy have cancer because they diagnosed a highly aggressive tumor, had doubled in size in his body. The cancer cells doubled every 24 hours. He used a chemotherapy that was so toxic that it was okay for the little boy. But the doctors and nurses, whenever they came in, that's what they were wearing.
Can you imagine? Wow. They had to wear a gas mask like that. So chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, these are all approaches that are used to treat cancer, and we can do it elsewise. Did you have any cancer cases that you wanted to do, Dr. Jeff, before we finish up with the HMDM part? Do you have any lower respiratory cases?
Oh, let me just switch over quickly. We talked a bit about Kedrin. We talked a bit about
Isis.
Archie, Isis. You know, lower respiratory, these guys are upper respiratory. Oh, of course. Well, no, that's also upper respiratory. The only other cancer situation I would like to talk about, which is, it was a combination of lower and upper, was Rufus, who was an older golden, who's diagnosed with cancer, respiratory tract cancer, but he also had tumors in his sinuses that had, at that point, eroded into his brain. So he was actually having neurologic symptoms as well as his respiratory symptoms. But with homeopathy, and of course, you know, they were given a prognosis of, you know, a couple of days or a couple of weeks with chemo. But with homeopathy, Rufus did go on to live and stop his seizures, and most, he would have nosebleeds once in a while, but he lived a couple of more years. So, you know, that may be a very extreme example. And we certainly never want to have our, you know, our pets progress to that point. But it's a, you know, it's a good example of what the body can do that we're not really aware of. You know, how much can heal when stimulated properly. Actually, the bottom line of what we're trying to accomplish is get out of the way while the body heals itself. Because Hahnemann, who, you know, founded homeopathy in the first place, you know, said there is no natural disease anywhere near as bad or harmful as a drug disease. So drug diseases are actually incurable in the homeopathic point of view in some individuals that they're susceptible, but pretty much there are no incurable cases that have not been, you know, already treated. So yeah, so it's very, very important to try and rely as much as you can on your individual pet's vitality and balance, then optimize it and stimulate it with homeopathy and all the ways that we know that you can do. So yeah. And yeah, Kristen, that's a great, I don't know how we overlooked, do you want to talk a second about Maria's story and her lung tumor?
Sure. She had a mammary tumor that was ignored for a year. So when she was surrendered to the shelter, and it ulcerated, we took her to the vet, that the allopathic vet that we used, she found that it had metastasized to her lung. So she had the mastectomy, and she was spayed. She had never been spayed. And now, let's see, at her last vet appointment, her x-ray showed that mass is starting to slowly increase, very tiny increase in size, but it's more dense looking. So it's really obvious on an x-ray now. So, but yeah, I mean, the cancer part seems to be, like, I've focused on other symptoms, you know, that seems to be kind of secondary. But, dense means it's just more clearly seen. It's almost like more opaque, like white. Before you could see maybe the outer edges, and you could almost see through it like a shadow. But now it's like this white mass on an x-ray. Does that help?
And Kristen, that was 2 years ago?
Three years ago.
Did they give you a prognosis at that time?
Yeah, 6 to 9 months, 3 years ago. Yep, raw food, no vaccines, yep.
Just vitality building.
Her beam is like solid, as best as I can tell, you know. But yeah, her beam never changes. She's happy, happy girl. She does have, you know, the fleas, and we're showing some progress in that area now. But yeah, the cancer kind of just seems, I hardly even think about that, so, you know, till like tonight we talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes with homeopathy, you may even be able to get that cancer, the tumor that's still in the lungs that's grown and gotten a little more dense, to go away, to completely resolve.
Hopefully. And she has she'll have an appointment in about a month, maybe 6 weeks. So we'll see. I think that is going to be really telling, you know, that it's, is it going to stay the same or is it going to get bigger, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She will be 11 in October. Next month, she'll be 11.
So doing great and having great quality of life for 3 years after diagnosis is great. And then the next step is to see if we can get it to completely go away.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And yeah, one of the clues actually is the fleas. If she stops attracting fleas, then you know she's healthier.
I know. That really bugs me that she has fleas.
Well, it's just a sign. It's not, I mean, other than fleas being buggy, it's just it's just a sign that she isn't completely balanced, along with that the tumor has gotten a little more dense, a little bigger. So those are both signs. And the fleas are more quickly responsive. So if you're doing homeopathy and when you hit the right remedy, the fleas just shouldn't be attracted to her.
Right, right.
And, you know, sometimes it takes us a while to find the remedy that right. matches that individual. But in that process, that would be the clue for you. When there are no fleas, then you've got a chance of the tumor getting smaller.
And I've got to chime in because even healthy, vital animals will get fleas if they're exposed to enough fleas. You know, if they're in an environment that fosters fleas, it may not be as bad as ticks, but they may not be bothered by the fleas as much, and they will get rid of them faster than a less healthy animal. Yeah.
The point I was making with Kristen was because she was struggling with the fleas.
I am struggling.
And I know, you know, sometimes when you're doing even everything as right as you possibly can, like Debbie was struggling with fleas there for a while, right?
I think of her every day. Every day I think about you, Deb.
So it definitely can be a challenge, but it is a good clue because you can follow that.
Right.
Yeah, right. That it's an obvious, you don't have to take an x-ray to tell.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
Right, you got right. it. So now briefly, we're just going to do, to finish up with the HMDM, the last part of HMDM is to pause, like you all have definitely talked about, Deb, we talked about you doing that at the veterinary clinic, to pause and to think, what are we going to do? Then take action, and then most importantly, be patient. And as Dr. Jeff was talking about earlier, allow the body to heal itself while you're carefully observing what's happening. And of course, the goal that we have is cure. And we want to see overall improvement in energy, vital force. We want to see the symptoms slowly resolving appropriate to how long they've been there. We want to see really improvement in beam if there wasn't anything, you know, if there was any limitation in the beam. We want to see some of the early warning signs or all of the early warning signs go away or be progressively going away. So if they were hairball vomiting, we want to not see that anymore. We want to, missing one. And you may see old symptoms from the past return, briefly, but the beam is great, so you don't do anything about it. You don't change. You don't repeat the remedy. You just watch, and it should come and go, or it may indicate needing a new remedy. But usually, if you're moving towards a cure, it will come and then go away in a few days and not cause much in the way of problems. So that's our goal, is to cure. Too often, what we do is palliation. And even with holistic, even with the very best, most careful homeopathy, we have to be aware of palliation. Because it's tricky sometimes, early on especially, to tell, are we palliating or not? So you might have I think with the respiratory tract, it'll be more clear. But if you maybe you're living in an environment, maybe there's a smoker around, and you're treating an upper respiratory or even maybe a bit of asthma, and the coughing, it looks like the coughing has gone away, and then, but nothing else is getting better. You know, maybe you haven't built up the health enough to be strong enough in the face of the smoke that's there, or the symptoms completely go away and you don't see a whole lot of change, but they're feeling better because they're not coughing so badly. You'll always have a clue that you're palliating instead of curing as time goes on, because with palliation, the condition will either persist or will come back. Even worse, of course, is suppression, which we see so much with regular drugs, but it can happen with homeopathic remedies as well. It can happen with any kind of treatment, although I don't see it with Reiki or flower essences, but in terms of deep healing, it's possible. But drugs are the major cause of suppression, and suppression of upper respiratory tract symptoms can lead to the lower tract symptoms. So you really want to be careful and observe suppression. And that's where the symptoms go away really fast. They stay away and something else comes about. So you have a more deep-seated problem, sometimes a mental emotional problem that appears. So patience is really important, and it often helps when we know there's other things that we can do, such as we'll be talking about tomorrow, and things that many of you are already doing, so that you can do something else while you're patiently waiting for the homeopathy to work. And our goal, of course, is happy Archie.
Sorry, I had to put that in there.
Oh, we love it. We love that. That's great.
And I just want to go back and get your opinion, Dr. Christina, because I'm agreeing with Sue that, you know, in the treatment of a deep, deep disease like lung cancer or any deep-seated disease, a skin symptom like attracting fleas or attracting parasites or hot spots, isn't that a good thing?
Yep, absolutely. It needs to be looked at in context, however. So if you have a dog that is, so like when Kedron was flat out with pneumonia and a sick dog, didn't have any skin, let's say, you know, no skin problems, a sick dog with pneumonia. As the homeopathic remedy was working, first you should see them feeling better in some way, some general beam improvement. And then, if as they're improving with beam and as the symptoms of the illness are beginning to show some improvement, any more superficial symptom that appears, like attracting fleas, like itchy skin, like diarrhea, maybe even some vomiting that's not too severe, it could even be that if you're dealing with a deep pneumonia that had a lung condition where it was so obstructed that they were having trouble, they couldn't even cough, that getting a cough would be a good symptom in that case. However, they should still feel good in spite of it. And that's the context of it. So you want the symptoms to move towards the outside. However, you don't want them to be super persistent or super severe, super bothering them.
And that's a real good point. I'm going to use fever as an example. And Debbie, I don't know if you remember that we dealt with this with the pneumonia and lots of other times, some with others, but often we'll give a curative remedy, energy or something in the beam improves, but the fever increases. And often that's a really good sign because that's your way of seeing that the body has been activated, that you feel better overall, and that it's doing its job. So that's why context is so, so important. And that's why I kept saying over and over in Newtown that it really does depend. It really does depend on the situation. It really does depend on the individual and the context of the symptom. So if you called your vet and you said, oh, she had a fever of 102.5 and now it's 103.5 or 104. The only reply you'd probably get is, oh boy, that's bad. That's really bad. But you guys know that it's not always a bad thing. That the fever is actually a good indication the body's doing its job. And I don't know if anyone remembers the typical of the kids being given aspirin. Do you remember when they used to give children aspirin?
Actually, it's interesting. Over the decades, they didn't used to give kids anything to stop the fever. Originally, they did herbs to stop the fever because it was so high and lasted so long. Then we got into the drug era. And they started giving drugs to stop the fever. And then pediatricians realized that it was making them actually sicker to do that. And so then pediatricians would only recommend giving antipyretics if the fever was high enough that it was likely to trigger seizures. And that's when they would come in and say, you need to do the fevers. And even with naturopathic methods, they don't want to just get rid of the fever. You don't want to just put them in a cold bath, for instance. But you could bathe them with cool or lukewarm water the way we talked about with heat stroke dogs, for instance. But you don't want to artificially bring that fever down because it's good. And if you think, remember back to we talked about how sickness progresses. So first it's energetic, then functional, then inflammatory. Fever is inflammation, and then tissue pathology. So if you're in tissue pathology and then you get a fever, that's moving up the scale. That's moving in the direction of healing. As long as, again, the context, the fever doesn't go on for too long. It's not too limiting to them. And some other clues of improvement are present. So important, the original notes that you take, the original observations that you make of the symptoms, of the concomitants, the symptoms happening elsewhere in the body, which is called concomitants, the overall symptoms, how they feel, things that make things better and worse, and quantifying each one of them. So then you'll be able to say, oh, okay, well, the energy is 2 points better, even though there's a fever of 104. That's definitely important. And it can be confusing when drugs are given. Drugs can confuse the picture. And therefore, it is difficult when you have an animal who's been given drugs in the past sometimes it can be much harder to treat them because you have to decide what's the reaction of the body and what's the reaction of the drug, that the drug has caused a symptom versus the vital force or energy field of the body has caused a symptom. So sometimes it takes a while to untangle that. Therefore, the more you can avoid the drugs, the better. And hopefully, as we've talked about these diseases, we'll go into the homeopathic and holistic treatments in Module 5. Hopefully, this has gotten it to where you'll be less scared of these diseases, even though they can be life-threatening. Pneumonia certainly can be life-threatening. Asthma can be life-threatening, for sure. Yes.
Becca isn't with us tonight, but she calls it caveman medicine, where, you know, there are people that ignore the symptoms, ignore until they progress and get seriously ill, and that's when they go to the ER. And that's what we're trying to avoid. That's exactly, you know, really the purpose for all the detail in the course, in all the courses. Really, I was thinking about how, you know, why we're doing all this detail in all the different courses. It's really to get you guys familiar and comfortable with every part of the body, not know necessarily all the details. All the details are there in the text or, you know, slides or otherwise, and you can always ask us for more information. But if you're comfortable, you're going to be less likely to get scared of symptoms and much less likely to do something that could end up being harmful. And I'm going to go back for a second because there is a lower airway connection to the fever and aspirin. And now, of course, you know, fever is brought down with Tylenol, with acetaminophen. There is now, I found in the research for this module, there's a direct link between Tylenol usage and asthma in kids. So the more they use the anti-inflammatories, you know, which are granted weaker than aspirin, the more chronic diseases that we're gonna see overall. That's really what's happening is acute diseases, which are manifestations of the body of, you know, via symptoms, are becoming chronic diseases. So, you know, we've gotten really, really good at getting rid of acute disease, but pretty much every chronic disease, just like the asthma and allergy slide you saw earlier, every chronic disease that's been looked at is just getting worse and worse and worse, hundreds of percent in some cases. Now, there, you know, that lengthy article I sent last week talking about a 300% rise in asthma since 70 something. You know, I don't remember being in school and kids having to go to the nurse to get their you know, Ritalin or peanut allergies being so rampant. I don't actually. I remember anyone with a peanut potentially life-threatening allergy of any sort. So yeah, so do everything you can to embrace the symptoms and, you know, realize they are your best friends, whether they're scary nosebleed symptoms or a cough or any other respiratory or other symptom. But speaking about cough, Eve, I see you down there, and I see you've got, has she ever had a tracheal cough? Ever diagnosed as tracheal collapse?
No, not. It was just reverse sneezing, coughing, and when I first got her, I didn't know better, so everybody was attributing it to allergies. They were putting her on Benadryl, and so I over time, I just kind of decided to ignore it and observe it. She does, I think, might have something anatomically, because when she gets excited and starts jumping, it's the combination of the excitement and jumping, it will cause her to do coughing, reverse sneezing. But as soon as she calms down, it goes away.
And does it happen every time she does jumping or get excited?
Not every time, but I was thinking about recording it to share it with the group, because I could probably provoke it. If I come home, like I try to right away either have her jump up on a couch and then play with her there, so that she's not as jumping as much, or come down right away and have her be, you know, in at her level. That is about 6 feet difference.
Right. Do you feel that it's gotten easier to trigger over time since you've gotten her, or less easy to trigger?
I feel that it has been less easy to trigger.
Okay.
Because in the past, sometimes she would start just like she might be laying down and she would go into these coughing fits that I couldn't really tell what was causing them. Now there's a correlation for most part between excitement and her kind of going up. She could mm-hmm. be excited, but if she's down, it's not going to cause it. Mm-hmm. It's just that movement of going on her hind legs causes it.
So that's the key thing, is to be watching, is something, you know, how you tell if something like that is getting worse or not, is does it take more or less to trigger it? Is it happening more or less frequently? And even if it's an anatomical problem, homeopathic treatment or good TCVM, or just in, you know, the general care, good care that you're doing, can make it better. So keep paying attention to, is it getting worse, getting better, staying the same? And of course, your goal is to get it better.
I was wondering if it's something anatomical, that could it just the fact that she's aging, could it make it worse?
It could. However, if the vital force is getting healthier and healthier, then you shouldn't have aging. You shouldn't have anything happening due to the years passing.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, Yvonne, that we ascribe a lot of things aging, but what that really means is that with the passage of time, the underlying internal imbalance is going to get worse and worse and worse if it's not treated, you know, homeopathically or energetically otherwise. But as Dr. Christian has said, and as Gail Pope has pointed out, with her kitties in the 20s and 30s, they can often be fine until their vitality runs out, at which point, you know, they stop being fine.
Yeah.
But it's expected to happen towards the end of the life, right?
Exactly. It should be the progression of any symptom over time should be staying at the same. It should ever, all the symptoms should be getting slightly better, as opposed to getting worse and worse and worse mm-hmm. as they age. So as they age, to have symptoms getting worse and worse is not because of the years passing, as Dr. Jeff said. It just means we didn't figure out what it takes to keep us healthy.
Okay.
Now, sometimes when an animal seems to be born or person with a very serious ailment, almost a congenital, you know, really serious congenital problem, then the symptoms may not get better over, they may get tolerable over time, but they may not completely go away. Even with the very, very best treatment, they may not completely go away. But still, over time, they should not begin to get worse. Mm-hmm. And that we do that. We blame so much on aging. Somebody said something really great. I love this, and we're out of time, but I'm going to end with this, is we say when old people forget something, oh, it's just because you're old. And how many kindergartners and first and second graders leave stuff all the time? They lose things all the time. They forget things all the time. Do we ever say, oh, that's because you're getting too young? So it's not a reason.
Age is a blessing, not a problem.
Right. So thank you all, and we will see you next week for Module 5 of the Respiratory Course, Homeopathy.
Okay, thank you all, and if you have any questions that we ran out of time to address so you didn't write, just put them in the forum or email us either way. All right, thanks. Good night. And Happy New Year.